So welcome to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications, with thanks to our supporting partner, 3X Logic. Also, now, my guest this week is none other than Lee Golding, Loss Prevention Manager, EU and UK, at a fashion jewellery retailer. Now, Lee spent the last 20 plus years at a number of outlets, including JD Sports, H&M, Cotton On, Alshire, working in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia Pac, which has given Lee a very, very unique and dare I say, rounded view on retail risk and loss prevention the world over. So Lee, thank you for taking the time to join us this week and welcome.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for the invite.
So I always like to like this question. You know, you've operated at a very senior level in a whole raft of retailers, but when young Golding was staring out of the window at school, what did you dream of doing? What was it? Did you dream of being risk director for Cotton On based in Australia, or was there something else, maybe the first love?
I was just dreaming about getting out of school, to be honest. I kind of fell into the industry, really. I left school with pretty much no qualifications, did various jobs. I was a porter at a hospital with my first job, and I was kind of a bit lost with regards to where to go for my career. Wasn't an academic, so continued studies wasn't for me at that time, and a friend, to be honest, was had a job with a security guarding company called Stablewatch. Back in the day, they were quite a big player, so he encouraged me to apply, and I did, and then I was wearing a big brown hat standing on the front of Marks and Spencer's for a period of time, detaining people for stealing cheese. Yeah. So that sort of was my entry into the industry. And it kind of, as I say, I was kind of very lost with sort of no direction. It kind of fell in love with loss prevention or retail security at that point. And I haven't looked back since, to be honest. And I've been lucky enough to have some really good opportunities to progress and understand retail and loss prevention wider.
So I love the fact that, again, yeah, there's a few key people started off, yeah, in the guarding side of things. So you really get the sharp end, if you like. But how did you go from guarding to being retailer side? What was the shift? Did you look at what was going on in Marks and Spencer and think, I want to be over there? How did you make that transition?
Yeah, again, it was. Just sort of when I started in sort of the late 90s, there was generally retail security, there was generally a presence in most retailers in the shopping centre. I mean, we all worked very closely together. And, you know, I was approached by a gentleman that called Brent Payne, who at the time was what we called the loss prevention controller for the Milton Keynes HMV store. And HMV, I think, were ahead of their game with regards to looking at wider loss prevention, moving away from just that detect and detain element of retail security. Brent had an opportunity for me, asked me to come across as a loss prevention officer, and sort of really started to learn the industry there, moving across, of course, still with the bread and butter retail security side, but looking at the inventory side of the business, looking at the audit side of the business, and sort of learned my game at HMV, really, with Brent, sort of taught me sort of the beginnings of loss prevention.
So, so you were stopping, you know, people stealing cheese in Marks and Spencer. I was trying to think of the only artist I could think of for HMV with a connection was Bread, but you've got to be even older than, probably even older than me to have actually been walking into HMV to buy an album by Bread. So, and you're right, HMV were, you know, very much at the forefront. They had some really, you know, cutting edge strategies and ideas there. I think they did a brilliant job. Yeah, it could be said maybe those putting the steer on the entire business. It's a shame they didn't have the same foresight of the risk and LP department. Yep. But there you are in the UK, but you look down your CV and it's got a huge international flavour. Again, is this another chance meeting, or did you sit down and go, do you know what? I need some sand and some sunshine, and I'm off to the Middle East.
Do you know what? I think I've had a lot of luck in my career. So I left HMV. I went to work for John Lewis for 6+ years. Initially, a store-based role. Back in the day, we had very large loss prevention teams in the stores. And I moved across to their head office as part of their national investigations team. John Lewis is a fantastic business. They really look after their people. So I kind of hit a glass ceiling where there was going to be a long time before there was any progression because people are in their roles for a long period of time. So I just put my CV out on some of the CV websites. And again, I just got a random phone call from a recruitment company saying, you know, we've got some roles. Initially in Saudi Arabia was the phone call.
Yeah.
So without consulting the wife, which was probably a bad decision, I said, yeah, I'd absolutely be interested. And they came back to me and said, there's a business called Alshire. They're a large business, a franchisee business over in Kuwait. They're now interested in a role as an area LP manager over in Kuwait. So again, without really thinking, just said, yeah, let's see what happens. And yeah, went through the interview process, eventually had to tell the wife that we're moving to the desert, picked her up off the floor.
Yeah.
And away we went. And I haven't looked back, to be honest. I think obviously there's a bit of a culture shock when you go and live and work overseas. Absolutely different to going on holiday. But it really developed me, not just professionally, but personally. Lots of challenges, certainly over in the Middle East with regards to cultural challenges. You kind of have to empty your glass and refill it with the way that we do things through from investigations, disciplinaries, down to store audits and procurement of security equipment. It was a totally different world. But something I wouldn't change, and it started to develop me as the away from somebody that was just looking for a job into somebody that had found a career they loved and developed me as a leader.
And I have to say, you know, I would say, you know, you came to real prominence in the Middle East, and then your name got further afield because of what you were doing there and what was going on. But a lot of people go to the Middle East and maybe come back to Europe, but you obviously spun the globe again and decided to go the other way and took on a huge role at Cotton On, based in Australia. So again, surely a random phone call. How on earth do you? Because it's 7 hours to Dubai. It's another 14-hour flight down to.
This was my doing actually. So we kind of spent some time out in the Middle East, and I worked across various countries there, based in Kuwait, and. Again, I think I just got the itch to go and see what was out there further afield. So it was, I'll tell you what it was, Paul. It's a simple Google search of loss prevention manager, Singapore.
Right.
Don't know why I put Singapore. And then lo and behold, this role appeared that I applied for. And then very quickly, you know, the very next day, I had my first interview.
Wow.
And then over a period of 7 days, interviews up to the CFO, and then was offered the role. I wanted to see how the loss prevention function runs in all parts of the world. Ultimately, the foundations are the same, but then you have to tweak those changes. So when I went over to Cotton On, initially as head of loss prevention for Asia, looking after sort of 4 markets there, my strategy was different in every market. The foundations were same, but I had to, you know, Malaysia, there was some cultural elements there that, you know, you have to adapt your strategy, particularly around the investigation and disciplinary process. And again, each market was slightly different. The challenges were different. You know, what was causing heavy shrinkage in one market, it was a different aspect was causing shrinkage in another market. So it was a fantastic opportunity. I also had the opportunity to then move on to a different role as the operational risk manager for Asia, and supporting our Middle East franchisee. And then the UK, when we brought in a brand for the UK. Then able to learn and take some responsibility around health and safety, regulatory compliance, and also store development. So another add-on to my role was managing our project managers in Asia for our new store fit-outs and new store builds. So again, a massive development as a manager and a leader.
I was rather hoping actually with the move to Singapore that your wife had decided that she wanted to pursue a career there, had applied, and then just told you that you were moving to Singapore and you needed to pick up the pieces and follow behind. That would only seem fair.
Yeah, I think she did find a career in sunbathing and drinking cocktails while we were there.
Well, fabulous. But no,
it was again my decision. So, you know, bless her. She's been very supportive. Obviously, we couldn't travel the world without the support of the kids and the wife. So.
Yeah. So that amazing. So I want to just move on now. And, you know, you've got all of these experiences. And you know, my take on it is that people are successful in their roles, they always find a way to influence senior management or the board to get what you feel you need for LP and risk. And it's one of those questions that crops up time and time again. People always say, you know, how do you do it? What goes on? So I'm going to leave that question with you for 30 seconds. We're just going to take a short break and hear from our sponsors. And then when we come back, we'll get the crystal ball out and you can share your thoughts and insights.
These days, surveillance cameras aren't just for monitoring a specific area, because with analytics, those cameras can do so much more. Like with any new development, there has been some hype, some disappointments, and lots of new options for the collection and use of data. Axis enables a smarter and safer world by creating network solutions that provide insights for improving security and new ways of doing business. For more information about Axis, please visit our website, www.axis.com.
So welcome back to this week's edition of the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Axis Communications. Thanks also to our supporting partner, 3X Logic. I am still talking with Lee Golding. And just before the break, I asked Lee about his take on influencing senior management on the board. It's always seen as a crucial skill for longevity and for getting what you want. So what's your experience? I mean, you've got, I mean, the Middle East to Asia to Europe. Is it the same? You know, what's the top tip? What serves you best?
I always find that whenever I'm decision making or need to influence or procure some funding, the first thing I do is I put my commercial filter on whatever that project will be. I think it's really important to understand not just the impact on your own KPIs, the impact on, for example, shrinkage, understanding the impact on the wider business. A good example of that is, you know, you've got a market where external theft is a problem. You know it's a problem. You've had those reports through. You're looking at a new way of tagging. I need to then put my commercial filter on that and look at if, you know, what's... especially nowadays, the customer behavior's changed. You know, there's less dwell time in stores. People are generally doing the research online, then they're going to go to the store to pick up that product and go. So I need to put my commercial filter on that decision, on that tagging, and say, if, you know, if we put these tags on, here's the return on shrinkage. But how is that going to impact customer experience and in turn impact sales? Does me tagging additional products to deal with an external theft issue negatively impact that customer experience, that dwell time, and then have a decrease in those sales? So customer filter for me is the number one thing I do, because ultimately the board wants to know how it's going to impact the bottom line. They just don't want to know how it's going to impact shrinkage. They want to know how it's going to impact the wider business and the bottom line. But run that commercial filter, and I think for me it's a proof of concept. So a small test is something I'll always do. So I'll work with my retail partners and we'll pick one or two locations that we will go and do a proof of concept. To identify that the equipment we're proposing is fit for purpose and it does indeed prevent shrinkage, but also it doesn't negatively impact those sales. Once we've got that proof of, through that proof of purchase, that proof of concept, I've then also got senior retail buy-in. So for me, it's simple. It's essentially run your commercial filter across, because we can all make decisions that's going to impact our KPIs but they get turned away from the board because we haven't thought through how it's going to impact that customer flow, customer experience, or sales, or the movement of inventory. Find a retail partner that you can. I'm a fan of steering groups. I like to say if I've got a project and it's going to impact something outside of loss prevention, then I would set up a steering group with the relevant business partners. Through that steering group, do your proof of concept, and then you've then take that data then to the board and talk to the wider commercial impact, not just your shrinkage reduction.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because so many people talk about, well, I can't believe we didn't get this project over the line because, you know, it would have saved us X or Y. And, you know, you sit there thinking, well, that's fine, because you wouldn't have sold any when you've sort of put all of your leather jackets behind a steel curtain or whatever. So, yeah, and yeah, I guess, and this comes on to my next question about, you know, what qualities do you think a modern risk loss prevention manager director needs? And I'm preempting your answer here, but from what you're saying, it's collaboration. I guess it's the trust of your peers to say, work with me to try this concept and let's see what the data shows.
Absolutely. It's all about people and relationships. It's about being a valued business partner. You know, and you have to make some tough decisions. I've worked in roles where, you know, we've removed tagging from stores because that was the commercial thing to do. My personal KPIs have been impacted on shrinkage, but the wider business, you know, sales have increased, customer experience have increased, customer service scores have increased. So I think it's definitely about people and those relationships. And through those relationships, you do become that valued business partner. I don't think we can, you know, technology is great. And, you know, there's certain things that are my go-to that I rely on for technology. But the most important thing is being able to influence. And you need those valued business partners alongside you to influence higher up. You're not going to get in the door alone to the C-suite.
And it's interesting that you touched on, you know, the technology. I'm always fascinated. So clearly the soft skills, the people skills is going to get things over the line. But when you're, you know, looking, do you have a go-to piece of technology, software? What's open on the browser the most? What's the app that's on the phone that you're watching? Where do you go to get an insight? To hit your
I'm quite old-fashioned. Good old-fashioned exception reporting is a must, and CCTV. I've worked with some businesses where there's very little budget for technology, which is I think why I've been able to I've developed my strategy around that influence and using the people. So for me, it's that exception reporting. There's multiple companies out there that provide them. I'm not going to name any of them, but and CCTV. I think if you were to have two tools that would set up your loss prevention function, they're the necessities, and that's global for me. They all come with their complexities. You know, in certain markets, it's more difficult to get CCTV into stores with local legislations. But yeah, they're the go-to, I think.
And CCTV, how far on the scale of Big Brother, if you like, do you go? Because obviously we've got analog on one side through to facial recognition and you know, threat analysis on the other. What's the sweet spot for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of in the middle. You know, it's, you know, the facial recognition is great. You know, the last sort of 5 years of my career was that there's been the retail evolution. So, you know, budgets have been tight. So for me, it's currently just remote access CCTV linked to your exception reporting is I think the sweet spot for me. It speeds up process. It speeds up admin time. You know, my teams, you know, the magic is in the stores. That's where it happens. So the more technology we can use to speed up, get them away from the desk and into the stores. And again, it goes back to that people thing. You know, it's generally for a lot of businesses, shrinkage happens because of, we know it happens because of theft, because of process admin errors. And I think a lot of businesses That happens because of lack of training, lack of awareness, lack of compliance to process. So I want my teams to be in stores. So that technology helps me take them away from the desk and put them into stores to deal with that people-to-people aspect of the business, which I think is where the magic happens in those stores.
And interesting there, and I guess final question for you, you talk about the magic in stores. I mean, you've seen a ton of markets the world over. What's your, are we going to have high streets and out of town shopping centers full of Starbucks and Costa coffees and everything's going to go online? You know, are stores about to have a resurgence because we're bored of our tech? Where do you think it's going to land? What's your take on it?
Yeah, I'm actually quite an optimist with regards to bricks and mortar. And certainly when I was finishing up my career in Asia, we did see a lot of online-only retailers starting to open stores or showrooms in the malls. I think there's a place for bricks and mortar retail. I think perhaps the larger sites are in the past. As I mentioned before, I think it's window shopping is not what it was. I think now the consumer wants to perhaps do their research online, on their phone, on the way to the shopping centre, get into that store and make that purchase. And you mentioned the Starbucks and the restaurants. I think that's what's driving, going to drive the footfall into the shopping centres. It needs to be an experience. Shopping will be a part of that experience, but I think the days are probably gone where a whole day is spent shopping, and certainly window shopping. People will still want goods. They still want to touch, feel and smell in some aspects, depends what they're buying. But I think, yeah, it's that fast. And you'll see dwell time, people going into stores, selecting a product, going to the till, purchasing it out, and then going to sit in that Starbucks. So I think what's going to drive footfall to shopping centres, in my opinion, is the experience. Now, you start to see a lot more of escape rooms and experience-based retailers open up in shopping centres alongside the bricks and mortar classical retail, but smaller boutique stores, I think, is kind of where we're going to head. But it still has legs, you know. I think we've seen with some of the lockdown, well, the lockdowns we've had globally, when people have been allowed to get back into retail, they've gone in droves. So I'm an optimistic with bricks and mortar. I think there's still space for it. But I think then some of the neighbours in the malls will change to more experience-based retail.
I mean, I don't know if you take the same opinion, but I look round and I actually think that a lot of retailers are upping their game. So at one point, e-com was a better experience and easier and more pleasurable than the stores, because stores were just a pain in the ass most of the time. Yeah. And the parking was difficult and the experience was difficult and the customer service was poor. Yet, I look at the realignment and it's very sad for some well-known brands to have gone, but those that are thriving at the minute, it's gone back to being a pleasure. And I think it's more pleasurable than shopping online. And particularly, you know, if something's not in stock, you know, Zara is an example I'll shout out to, you know, buying some, my boys are 8 and 9 and they had one size, not the other. And the teenager runs over on the Saturday with a little handheld PDA, quick scan, no problem at all. We'll order it. It'll be there in 2 days. So they've made a sale there and then. We've walked away feeling positive about their stuff at the weekend. And the Among Us T-shirt that the 10-year-old was, or 9-year-old was gutted that he couldn't get at the time. He's 10 on Wednesday. He's shipped on the way. So you walk out kind of nodding, and then you go into the Starbucks next door and you think that was a great experience. So it does feel like physical retail's, you know, responding.
I agree. And Zara's probably one of the ones that I would have called out as well. It's that seamless experience. It doesn't matter whether it's bricks or clicks, you know, it's one experience and it's not one or the other now.
No. Yeah.
Even ordering at home and collecting from a store, you know, it's a lot more convenient than having someone to wait in for a delivery if it's an expensive product. So, yeah, I think retail is up in its game, and the players that have been investing over the last few years on that, I don't know if we still say omnichannel, but that omnichannel experience, are winning.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It does feel like if anybody refers to it as omnichannel or multichannel, they've probably not got it right. It's just retail, isn't it? It has to be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's got to be the way forward. Lee, it's always a pleasure. to talk to you. I'm thrilled that you're back in the UK, not just from a selfish point of view that we'll see you at one of the events, although it was always a highlight of the year to meet up with you in Singapore as we were passing through that part of the world. So who knows where travels might take us in the future. But for now, Lee, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Cheers.